Sorry, I'm getting a little passionate today about this because that guy drives me crazy down south, I'll tell you. And 41 million other Canadians. So.
Doug Ford doesn't speak for Canada. I'm Frank Vaughn. It's August 15th, 2025. Why are we aggravating the Americans? Why are we aggravating the people who have done so much to enable our existence with a massive trade surplus? And the answer is short-sighted individuals like Doug Ford are using a touchstone issue which is popular with the uninformed. This fear, this hatred of Donald Trump, this union of the idea of America and Donald Trump as being the same thing. When Donald Trump leaves office, America will remain. They're right there. They have done nothing but business with us. But these fools want to throw it all away in favor of becoming far more dependent on China and Europe, which is national suicide. But then again, that's what they've been all about this entire time. The idea of Doug Ford passionate about anything but a well-stocked buffet or his political needs is laughable. But no matter how much Doug Ford shows Canada who he is, whether it's the people who voted him back in office or the people who hate him, everybody's looking at the same thing. Doug Ford having picnics and vacationing and spending his off time with Chrystia Freeland, just like Tim Houston. Out of the East Coast, these so-called conservatives love to spend their time with federal liberals, coming together, as they say, as one Canada under the oppression of the government. But no matter what he does, they're not going to love him. Doug Ford is corrupt was a trending theme this morning. Hey, tough guy fraud, thought you were teaching the U.S. and Trump a lesson by canceling contracts. Buy Canadian, you said. Shop Canadian, you said. Now we once again see that you speak out of both sides of your mouth. Why is that? Because Ontario, under Doug Ford, is contracting American companies to build your publicly funded hospitals and to do things that he either doesn't want to do here in Canada with Canadian labor or can't do with Canadian labor, and they're calling him out for it. And here's another one. Almost 700,000 unemployed Ontarians as U.S. companies are awarded public contracts for new hospital that will be privatized by Ford and Jones. Now, I don't know about the whole privatization thing. There's a knee-jerk reaction on the left in this country that sitting on a waiting list for a year to 2 years for healthcare is somehow better than having private options, forcing you in the tens of thousands Canadians to leave the country every single year to seek healthcare somewhere else, paying taxes to some other country that we could be collecting right here. I know government loves taxes. Why is it tens of thousands of Canadians are failing to be harvested? Most other countries that deliver universal public health care also have private components in their system. Having private components doesn't mean you lose universal coverage. This is a well-known thing in Western countries, but it's not well-known amongst Canadians, who are some of the most propagandized and ignorant people on the planet, and belligerently so, so very proud in their ignorance, so certain that their talking points are far more real than reality itself. The point being, they're never going to love Doug Ford. This is the very same Doug Ford that for some bloody reason, Daniel Smith and Scott Moe are proud to stand beside in front of a bunch of Canadian flags and present the United Canada Front, even though Canada has never had Alberta or Saskatchewan's back in 150 years, going back before Saskatchewan was actually a province. It starts at the very beginning before the land was even peopled. Ottawa hasn't had its interests at heart. So this is Scott Moe. Our Canadian canola industry is every bit as important as our economy and jobs as Canadian steel, aluminum, auto manufacturing, and forestry. Here's my statement on the 76% tariffs on canola imposed by China today. Now, the official response of the Carney government is nothing. There's no elbows-up nightmare when a communist state is putting the screws to us. There's no talk about banning President Xi or targeting Chinese officials like Elon Musk was targeted. Everybody encouraged that. seemed to be officially sponsored. There was none of that. There's not even a response, a real response from the Carney government at all. And Saskana, somebody that I quite like, even though we've disagreed in the past, I quite like her and I like her takes, and she says, where the hell is Carney? This is totally unacceptable. That's a justified question. But the other question is, where the hell is Scott Moe? Where the hell is Daniel Smith? Because they got it half right. They just can't seem to take the next step, the next logical step, which is all the money goes north-south. It doesn't go east-west. We trade north-south. The Americans are just waiting with bags of money on the other side of the border. That's our natural trading partner. Our prosperity and our long-term future comes from the south, not the east, not the west, not from Asia. Every time they talk about Asia, every time they talk about opening up markets, just creates a dependency on a totalitarian state. Because when we talk about Asia, we're primarily talking about China here. And we're also primarily talking about projects and things where the infrastructure doesn't really exist now. These are solutions that would only take root, if you can even call them solutions, years down the road, if they can even get done. Meanwhile, business can be conducted today if we just stop this virtue signaling about a united Canada. Why is Scott Moe waiting like a good little boy for crumbs to fall from the table of Ottawa? And for that matter, why Daniel Smith? Watch this. Here she is on CTV News. Now, keep in mind that brief clip of Doug Ford and the body language that he's shown, and you're going to recognize the familiar head shake at the thought of Donald Trump.
Oh, it's really painful. I know, talking with my forestry and parks minister, that has seen that the tariff go up to, I believe, 35% is going to be really devastating for a lot of businesses. I know that there are many that are barely holding on, and we've got to, again, look for ways that we can find new markets. It's going to be complicated.
It's such the wrong take. We don't have to look for new markets. We already have a market. The issue is Ottawa is belligerent. Ontario under Ford, they're belligerents in the face of something perfectly normal. Tariffs, they're normal. We charge the world to do business in Canada. We love tariffs when other nations are paying them. Why isn't Smith? Why isn't Moe? Why isn't Ford? Why isn't Carney? Why isn't Polyev? Why are none of them telling the truth about the tariff structure in Canada? Why are none of them telling the truth about what the word reciprocal means versus punitive? Two different sets of tariff by the United States. Why are we only getting insanely angry at the Americans? Meanwhile, we're getting the screws put to us by China, and Smith and Ford and Carney and Polyev, all they can talk about is how we got to do more business with China. They're screwing us the same way as the Americans, except they're a smaller trading partner than the United States. And yet our reactions are completely unhinged to America and not China. When's political leadership going to wake up? The status quo is not going to protect us. Ottawa is not going to protect us. Carney is a Brookfield guy who's been parachuted into Canada to maximize profit for his friends, to maximize how much money they make off the destruction of Canada. He literally promised it during his campaign. And check out how Canadians have responded. Now, I know people hate polls, especially in between elections. But it seems to me the balance of polling shows the Liberal Party is still well ahead of the Conservative Party. And if anything, support for the Conservatives has been weakening. If the Conservative Party of Canada is going to lose anyway with the strategy that they're on, why don't they go for broke? Why don't they become the party of the truth? Polyev is more than capable of delivering the truth in a way that's better than pretty much all 338 members of Parliament. He's a very good speaker. He's very smart. He's very articulate. But that Polyev got completely lost in the messaging and the talking points. He's been repressed. He's been nerfed. He's becoming milquetoast like every other leader of the Conservative Party of Canada. Why not try to be adversarial? As we just seen with Doug Ford, the media is never going to love you. The left is never going to love you. So why don't you get in a big fight with them? That's what opposition means. It means political warfare. It means being on the front page of every single paper, every single day, with them saying that you are the most horrible person in the world, and you just lay truth bombs down. And Canadians, some Canadians, will start to get it. They will be encouraged. They will be emboldened. There's a cloak of silence. I used to live in Ontario. There's a cloak of silence in Ontario. People speak in whispers about how they feel if they have conservative mind. Or it's not even necessarily just conservative, if you have conservative mind. If you just go against the ruling paradigm, you speak in whispers because you're afraid of the unhinged people who are going to come after you. And this is in spite of the fact that well over a third of Ontarians vote conservative in some way. One of the things that shocked me, a culture shock, when I came out to Saskatchewan, is how people openly talk about a paradigm that is not emanating from Ottawa. As a former resident of Ontario, it's hard for me to get used to people, young people, in fact, being openly able to talk about gender madness, for instance, and the gender unicorn. They speak in loud voices in public about how the insanity's gone too far. In Ontario, that's not how it is. What these people need, what these people crave, is a bold leader in a position to win who isn't just a charlatan, telling them the hard truths and encouraging them and emboldening them to speak up themselves about it. Instead, we get a leadership, if you can even call it that, that leads to this outcome. The point being, if you're just going to lose an election anyway, why choose mediocrity? Why not lead? Why not do something with your platform? They got multi-million dollar budgets. They have the ability to call press conferences and the national media will be there. They have the ability to spark controversy. This isn't about a Trumpian revolution in Canada because Donald Trump's style wouldn't work here. But Pierre Poilievre alone is capable of a very sophisticated and aggravating way of arguing. We've seen it throughout his entire career. And largely, he's abandoned that approach since he became leader. And some would say, well, that's the necessary transition to leadership, Frank. We're building a winning strategy. How's that working? How's it going? The total destruction of the NDP is well underway. They're polling at 6%. That vote's never coming to the Conservative Party of Canada. The left is consolidating in this nation and, dare I say, has a stranglehold on our politics. And the fact of the matter is, the only way I think that we can sufficiently change that is if the provinces of Western Canada, where the people who think differently are largely concentrated, wake up and adopt the Quebec model and start making noise about leaving this terrible deal. At Mbrandt 75, you should go check him out. He's looking over StatsCan. He's looking over grants. He's looking over, pouring over the money being spent on your behalf, the money that's extracted out of your pocket, and the future of money, your children's money, your grandchildren's money. $72 billion spent on refugees. That's what Canada's up to. The city of Mississauga raising the national flag of India at Mississauga Celebration Square in recognition of India's 79th Independence Day. Not Canada's. I said the post-national state takes pride only in other nations. It has no core identity to protect and promote. Canada is a doormat. Anna NB says lots of flag raising, communist flags, Greek flags, every other flag except Canada's. We're the only nation on earth. And this is what post-national multiculturalism is. That we celebrate the stronger politics and ideologies of other nations. Canada, as I've got a tweet I'm going to put out, Canada's like a soapbox. And everybody stands on us with their muddy boots and uses our microphone and our platform to advance their national causes. All the while, Canada, the nation that had a history, the nation that used to be the fourth largest military in the entire world, is told to stand down, shut up, you have no history, you have no identity, you have nothing to be proud of, you have no core identity. India is more important. And folks, maybe they're right. Something like 1 in 12 Canadians, 1 in 10 Canadians, quote-unquote Canadians, now comes from India, many who have never learned English, many who have never learned our history, many who don't care. We talked about the fact that Canada has a larger Sikh diaspora than India itself, the place that they come from. And something like 1 in 8 are tied to Khalistani extremism. I put forward that between Hamas and Hezbollah, our actor, our drama teacher prime minister, spent $170,000 of taxpayer money flying ISIS brides home to Canada in business class. Former Canadian prime minister Justin Trudeau spent at least $170,000. Peanuts compared to what they do, the $70 billion for refugees. Government cash bringing ISIS brides from Syria. 8 women were flown back business class and housed at the $300 per night Montreal Airport Marriott, where they ran up exorbitant bar tabs at taxpayers' expenses. Drinking is a very authentic Muslim activity, apparently. The women had traveled to the Middle East to join the terrorist organization, but were given a luxurious homecoming when they returned to Canada in 22 and 23. This is what the drama teacher brought us. And you know, Trudeau's not alone. He's not the only drama teacher. Zelensky is an actor. Macron is an actor. He's not some virtuoso, incredibly brilliant, sucked in Birgit, got her love because he was so brilliant at 15. It's all just a story. It's all just narrative. We have a bunch of actor leaders that don't lead anything. They're masqueraded for public consumption, but the rulers exist behind the scenes. Now, in Canada, we have Mark Carney. I thoroughly believe that Mark Carney is one of the real masters of the universe, sent here to take things in hand, because the situation that our drama teacher prime minister created within the Liberal Party essentially enabled this narcissistic sociopath to completely tank in Canada, which is such a leftist nation. Such a left-leaning nation. The Liberal Party base, which is now well over 40% of people who are never going to move their votes, seemingly never going to move their votes, were moving away because of the presence of Trudeau, and they had no way to get rid of him. And so the powers that be decided Carney's the guy. He's going to come in and he's going to straighten it out. He's not going to listen to the Melanie Jolies, and he's not going to listen to the Chrystia Freelands. He's going to take things in hand, and he's going to run Canada in our interests. And here we are. But I'll give him credit. He ran an honest election campaign. He told you that you, productive Canada, what little is left of you, was going to suffer. He delivered an honest message. And now we're going to find out. To finish off, I just want to talk very briefly about the summit that's happening in Alaska. The headline on screen is the EU throws an epic tantrum as Trump meets with Putin. These are real leaders. Now, I've had some issues with Trump. The cover-up of the Epstein files, seemingly to protect Israeli intelligence, that's one of my issues. There's other issues, but there's a hell of a lot of good things that he's still doing and trying to do. And one of the things is ending this madness that is the Ukraine war, which is a Western war. We egged it on. We created the conditions. We kept swatting at Russia. If you want to go back even further, we can say decades. Since the fall of the Berlin Wall, we can trace NATO aggression. We can trace NATO expansion. It might be called a defensive alliance, but there's nothing defensive about it. It is an assertive alliance asserting itself. And I would dare say, a greater threat to NATO in the modern context is not Russia. It's Turkey, a member. Turkey, which is an Islamic radical government that uses migrants as a weapon to undermine Europe, to undermine Greece, opening its border and threatening to flood all of Europe with migrants. Turkey that plays all sides of the fence, appropriately sitting in the center of the world, Turkey, which is actively opposed to Israeli interests, which the West is all in favor of promoting, Turkey. But anyway, that's another story. I've long thought, since the fall of the Berlin Wall, that the coming together of the eagle and the bear would be good for global stability. And my hope with this meeting that they're having is at the very least, they can come up with a deal that sidelines Zelensky, that sidelines Macron, that sidelines all of these actors and inexperienced people, that sidelines the people behind them and imposes a deal. Because millions have died in Ukraine pointlessly. Peace deal is on the table, ready to be signed, and the West came in and said, no, 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 you're not going to sign that. And Zelensky went along. He suspended elections. He repressed the press. He repressed the church before the war even began. He was killing ethnic Russians and trying to erase them from eastern Ukraine. And again, no one wants to tell you that story. Polyev, Carney, Trudeau, many of the premiers, all they can do is virtue signal their unconditional support for the war in Ukraine, that it will go on until the last Ukrainian person's dead. Polyev will never have to duck a bullet. Carney will never have to duck a bullet. None of the premiers will have to duck a bullet. Their support is from nice and safe overseas. They're willing to risk the Third World War and every Ukrainian life to advance the interests of the World Economic Forum and all of its derivatives. And we got this shot, this one shot for the real men in the world, for the real leaders in the world to say enough is enough. Stop the killing. Here's how things are going to be. And the weird thing is, as a Canadian watching this, and I'm eagerly watching this and eagerly awaiting the outcome, I don't even want to speculate. I mean, at the bare minimum, hopefully they come to an agreement when it comes to nuclear weapons. Any kind of agreement when it comes to nuclear weapons and a renewal of the START treaties or any of the arms control treaties that have been engaged in with Russia would be a clear signal to the world that the Americans and the Russians are not interested in nuking each other, even if the war continues. At a bare minimum, I hope we get that. But I hope we get a lot more. Because that war needs to end. Canada's not going to end it. Europe's not going to end it. They're all fools. It's going to take real leadership to get the job done. So, all eyes on Alaska. And we'll see what happens. I'm Frank Vaughn. I'll see you in the next one.